Anton Chekhov's final play, The Cherry Orchard, tells the story of an aristocratic family that's struggling to hold on to its beloved orchard in a country on the brink of revolution. This modern classic is being revived by the Roundabout Theatre Company in a vibrant new adaptation by Stephen Karam, who won the Tony Award for his play, The Humans. It's on stage at the American Airlines Theatre on West 42nd Street until December 4th, and I'm very pleased to welcome three of the play's stars, Diane Lane, John Glover, and Chuck Cooper, to our show now. Welcome.
Thank you.
Diane, didn't you make your Broadway debut in this play as a child actor in the 77 production directed by André Surbin?
That is legally true. Yes. Although I didn't speak. There's no speaking parts for 12-year-olds in Chekhov.
How old were you?
I was 12. I was 12 years old, yeah.
And that's so cool.
Funny.
Well, after that, you went to Hollywood, became a celebrated film star. How does it feel to come back to this play now in the central role as Renovskaya, the famous actress who returns to try to save her family's estate? Is there a kind of a symmetry here?
Well, there is a symmetry, and you know, it's an ensemble story. There, I remember the Paul Davis poster was so beautiful with Irene Wirth on it. And, of course, I'm very wonderfully haunted by the memories of that production, but at the same time, ours is so much more kind of vivacious and brisk and humorous. And I think, you know, people do have an expectation of Sturm and Drang and the doom and heaviness and the Greek tragedy aspect of this story, but it has a lot of sitcom in it too, as we have unearthed that apparently Anton Chekhov wanted when he saw it performed.
Yeah, he said it was a comedy, right?
He called the play a comedy, but in his first production in 1904, Konstantin Stanislavski, kind of a theatrical saint, treated it as a tragedy, and that seems to have set the tone or the split between the two ideas seems to have set the tone for productions of it ever since.
Yeah, so much of those plays. I remember I was doing, when I was a freshman in college, played Constantine in The Seagull. And when I went down to the Barter Theater to work, there was an actress named Mary Finney who had been in The Seagull at the Alley Theater. And I was so excited to meet her. And I said, yes, yes, we were both in The Seagull. And she said, oh, yes, those plays. I think the actors enjoy them much more than the audience.
Oh, really?
Well, because we're all feeling, you know, the method came in. And
I have to tell you, as an audience member, I just adore Chekhov. But there are people who argue that all Chekhov should be played as comedy and let the tragedy just come through.
Mm-hmm. It's there.
Yeah. It's certainly funny and it's certainly tragic. It's tragic comedy.
Chekhov, is this the first time you've ever played Chekhov?
This is totally the first time I've done Chekhov. You know, I've done lots of Shakespeare, but this is my first foray into the Chekhovian milieu, as it were. And it's fun. It's been a wonderful journey, just meeting all these guys and just having a great time explicating the drama, as it were.
And you play Pishchik, a landowner.
Pishchik. We remember that by piece of chicken. Pishchik.
Whatever it takes, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting that
all our Russian names are really.
Oh man!
There's a little insert to the playbill with all of the Russian names and pronunciations, cool. And because this is like the beginning of a Russian novel where they give you all the names of the patronymics because they're afraid that Americans like me will mispronounce the names.
No, I don't know. Well, in
me
the
too.
Play,
the
characters have different – there's like familiar names and then there are formal
names. Yes, in Russian
names,
they have three different versions.
The patronymics.
It's like dramaturgics. Well, I don't know. But –
Well, your character.
Charlie wants tuna that tastes good. I remember that.
Your character is Andreevna.
Well done.
And John's, your brother, Gaev, is Leonid Andreevich.
Well
so
done.
The same. God, so that means your father's name is Andre.
Well, see, we're addressing each other throughout the show, and sometimes people. And
calls
he's Leonia. Leonia is the most familiar version.
Yeah. And he's
or Gaev.
Gaev, but nobody ever calls him
ever
Gaev.
Once.
That name is never said in the play. Yeah.
And my name is Boris. No one ever calls me Boris.
Boris.
John, had you ever appeared in this play before?
This is my third time to do The Cherry Orchard. I was Yippee Hodolf when I was younger.
Oh, I didn't did not know that. Yes, oh, yes. My God, I would have paid a pretty penny to see who was that.
I want to see his squeaky boots.
But it must be fun to appear in the same play as different characters as you get older.
Yeah.
Your character's a ne'er-do-well. I think you could probably have a lot of fun with him.
Well, I do.
Because he's providing comic relief in the midst of tragic situations.
Yeah. And he's the only one who doesn't kind of move on.
John provides hilarious relief.
What are you talking when? In the dressing room or on stage?
No, I'm in my dressing room. Here you all have your own party out there. I'm like, I want to be in that scene.
How does Stephen Karam's new adaptation differ from earlier versions? Didn't he work from a literal translation?
Yes, I believe it was actual Russian translated.
Word for word.
Directly.
Mm-hmm. Has he updated the language to make it more contemporary?
Yes.
More American?
Yeah. I say get out.
At one point?
Several times.
Yeah.
Get out.
So, did you work with him during rehearsal
process? Oh, yeah.
He was there to certify his own take on things before it was finalized. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it was very much two-way kind of a thing, too, I thought.
And during previews, he and Simon would go, you know, listen to the audience and what they were getting and make changes. All kinds of changes were made. So he worked on it up until opening.
It was collaborative. Yeah. He was open to...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Simon being your director.
Yes.
There are things that are changed a bit. For example, aren't the freed serfs referred to as former slaves?
Well, it's not the first production to do that.
But that happens.
Simon's philosophy was, Chekhov wrote a play about the now in Russia in 1904. And they were attacking this play as about now, right now, in the world, what's happening right now in the world. And it's very pertinent to what's happening right now.
Even though it's set in Russia, we can see all sorts of
parallels
in right now. Current America.
Yeah.
Many American parallels, especially when Lopakhin in, the third act has that... when he reveals that he's bought the plantation.
Now, Lopakhin is a former serf. You see that as a spoiler?
It's 100 years old. I don't think we have to worry about that.
He's a former serf who has become rich.
Yeah.
And Trofimov's lecture to us in the Chekhov's second act about world. And pride.
Human
it was all about today.
Yeah, where's the healthcare? Where's
the libraries?
I love that speech.
Healthcare, especially.
Yeah.
Wasn't this play based somewhat on Chekhov's own life? Didn't he actually plant a cherry orchard on his estate outside of Moscow, which was later cut down?
I've heard it said that he thought of himself as Lopakhin.
I thought he invented capitalism with that character. Pretty great. But I was sheltered.
Well, he was a doctor.
Right.
Well, a physician, exactly. Right. Probably much like the Nick. I'm kidding. Yeah, but, I mean, in those days, what a physician saw and the tools they had to work with, I'd like to think of him as sort of Van Gogh as an artist, the way he would hang out with the real people and really see what was really going on. I think that Anton would do that. And see all types of people in his travels to heal and be a medicine person.
He was very generous, too. Apparently, he never turned anybody away for medical help.
For money.
I'm speaking with Diane Lane, Chuck Cooper, and John Glover, three of the stars of a new production of The Cherry Orchard that is currently at the American Airlines Theater on West 42nd Street as part of the Roundabout Theater Company's productions of great plays. And in this case, we're talking about a play that some people consider to be Chekhov's greatest masterpiece, although I think a good case can be made for Three Sisters, the Seagull, and Uncle Vanya. But those four plays are extraordinary for a man who died in his early 40s, was it?
He looked very young in the photograph I saw of him. It wasn't long before his death. He knew he was dying, supposedly. I mean, as a physician, I think he had a better inkling of that than other people.
He was 44 when he died.
I think this was written 4 years before his death. He was 40 years old. He was in
There's certainly some metaphor in Fears and the ending with Fears and Chekhov's journey, I think.
Well, Fears is a name.
Yeah.
You have to tell people that. They might think it's an emotion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fierce character in the play at the end.
Who's played
the,
by
the faithful servant. Played by
loved actor.
The one and only.
Joel Grey.
Joel Grey.
Yeah.
We love you, Joel.
And hopefully I'll get a Fierce in me.
Oh, you
sure.
This is what you're looking forward to later in your career?
Sure, sure.
In the play, Madame Ranevskaya has...
Ranevskaya,
okay, yeah.
Well, I say that a lot.
She's returned to the family estate to try to save it from being sold, but she resists all suggestions of practical measures to accomplish that. Is she kind of living in a state of denial?
You want to put a question mark on that sentence, really?
Well, she keeps on spending. She has no money, but she keeps on spending.
It's pretty textbook.
It.
You know, Chekhov was such a great observer of human nature, and he'd seen it all, I think, and he managed to get so many human foibles and shortcomings and blind spots and even health conditions to the stage. I mean, Pieschik is a narcoleptic, and there's various conditions that are afoot on stage, and they are funny, and you know, we all do have blind spots in our lives, and it's good to see one that's that blatant, because it does make us think about our life. My character says on stage, don't go to the theater, look at your own life. Everybody cracks up in the audience, because it's true. We should draw parallels and see where we're in denial.
But she's also somebody who's been considered a great actress in her time, and so she kind of treats the world as though, I mean, she was born into wealth, but also she treats the world as though I am still a grand dame.
I think she's the last of the Mohicans, of which she doesn't know it. I mean, I think it's a dying breed, as it were, literally and figuratively. The revolution was coming. Chekhov didn't live to see it, but there was definitely tremendous change afoot. And I think our play is relevant in this very awkward and... I would say upheaval type of election season. You know, we have this play to me is mental health break. All of us, you know, we get to hear beauty and truth and sanity and a kind of exploration of profound values rather than, you know, the media circus that's on TV right now.
But Chekhov almost seems to be predicting of revolution, even though
he
couldn't
it.
Have known. Mm-hmm. In your character's case, she has mixed feelings about the estate because it was where her young son died. And so she's been living in Paris for the past 5 years to escape those painful memories. Can her inaction be seen as a passive way of letting go of that tragedy?
Mm. I think that it's a perfect analogy of her life. Her life is a perfect example of the past holding back the inevitable future. And you know what happens when you resist change.
Right.
It just tramples right over you. I mean, you need to be fluid and go with it. And that's what they say, go with the flow. I mean, and not a lot of people are good at that.
John, your character, Gaev, isn't really any more capable of dealing with the situation than his sister.
He's the least capable in the play, I believe. Yeah, he can't let go.
He seems to be spending most of his time playing billiards. Is he a symbol of the uselessness of the aristocracy?
I think so. I think I see him as somebody who's had electric shock when he was young. He's in trouble. That's his therapy, that he was given the billiards thing to relax him. Yeah. It's his Valium.
And is Pischik's only attempt to improve his situation to repeatedly ask everybody for money?
He's obsessed
with that. You know, he definitely is obsessed with money and the procuring of it. He's also a person who's one of those people who uses what is, and to some degree, I think more than the other aristocrats in the room, goes with the flow. He really does roll with it and expects that the outcome will be good no matter what the evidence leans towards.
Is that because these people have been trained to be idle and be taken care of Even though money is tight, we still have servants.
I think it's that Chekhovian paradox. You know, I think it's what is the difference between someone who is really optimistic and hopeful and someone who is just really in denial and not paying attention and not really dealing with reality. I mean, there's a point when does the needle move from one side to the other side? And that's what Chekhov examines in a lot of these people.
Being open to opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think Piszczek is open to opportunity.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then different than burrowing deep and hiding in your
he's fancy like bedroom. Whatever, yeah. Train track, clay, whatever, you know, what's out there. Mm. Use what is. Mm.
And then there's the local businessman, Lopakhin, who we mentioned earlier, played by Harold Perrineau, who has risen from poverty to become the wealthiest character in the play. Mm-hmm. And
he's P. Diddy.
He has suggested turning the orchard into a development of summer cottages to save the rest of the state. He's sometimes seen as the villain, but do you think he's a villain?
I was so surprised the other day in that talkback when that woman said that about that character.
He seems to be sympathetic to their situation. He's trying to help them, even though
he helps them for three acts, tries to tell them what to do, and they ignore it.
And also, he's the least villainous person who would actually wind up the most near to being family.
Yeah.
Of Renyevskaya. They've known each other since they were children. I mean, she, at the opening of the play, he says, "I love you like family." And she gets all Twitter-pated and says, "Oh, mercy. Let's get you married to my young daughter."
But as you note, he's obviously more connected to reality than the rest of them. Is it because his father was a serf on the estate?
Well, certainly his perspective is vastly different. And certainly he comes to the world with a different mindset. I mean, he knows he has to work hard. He knows he has to be the best. He knows all of these things that these aristocrats have been able to ignore and pay no attention to. So his perspective is much more laser-like. And
he's also the workaholic.
Sorry to interrupt you, but he's self-professed in
a way.
Because, he talks about being barefoot in the winter. You know, I'm sure he had to work hard to finally get some shoes so he didn't have to be barefoot in the winter.
We're trust fund babies.
Yeah,
we didn't need to do anything.
Distinct.
It was all there, laid at our feet.
We didn't have to do anything.
I love all these different perspectives that are brought to wealth, distribution of wealth, socioeconomic containment and boundaries that are being broken through, and I think perspective is key. That's what you were saying about you know, him. He has shame about his handwriting, and it's endearing because he is showing his vulnerability at one point because he wasn't able to have an education, and he was barely, he grew up illiterate, so he's compensated for that. Lopakhin has. He's overcome adversity, whereas we represent people who are incapable of being anything but dependent.
Sort of mindlessness people.
I'm speaking with Diane Lane, John Glover, and Chuck Cooper, three of the stars of a new production of The Cherry Orchard, currently at the American Airlines Theater on West 42nd Street. Production of the Roundabout Theater Company. This is WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, this production also features a bit of colorblind casting that obviously was just because they chose the best actors for the roles. Chuck?
Chuck, the black person in the room? Yes. Chekhov has been a melanin-challenged playwright. But the Roundabout is.
But Pushkin supposedly was part African.
Well, his I found out in our research that our wonderful director had us do that Pushkin's grandfather was a black man, a general in the Russian army, and so when we say black Russians, there are lots of black Russians.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's not like an imagined thing.
So. Shakespeare's comedies always ended with weddings. We do have a terrific party scene in this play, but it ends with the news that the Cherry Orchard has been sold. Is Chekhov more cynical about love and the possibility of lasting happiness than Shakespeare?
Huh. Interesting. I don't know enough of the other plays.
Is Shakespeare cynical about love?
No, but he always no. At He's the end, he has the happy ending. Even to The Merchant of Venice, it ends with a wedding, and that's supposedly a happy thing.
Wow.
Well, we're not going to resolve it here.
No, I like it. I like the inquiry. It's a very smart question about cynicism around love.
But so much of this play is about people's romantic relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the disconnect. This play is a lot about people coming towards each other with an idea and a disconnect and being able to grasp what you're being offered.
Now, what about this role, Diane? You mentioned that Irene Wirth played it in the production that you were in. It's also been played by Judi Dench, Diana Rigg, Peggy Ashcroft, Jane Alexander, Charlotte Rampling, Helen Hayes, Annette Bening.
And Jessica Tandy.
And of course, the playwright's wife, Olga Knipper. Is it because this is just such a fabulous role to play?
Well, I've made jokes about it, but it's sort of like a dare. I mean, when somebody offers you a role like this, if they think you can pull it off, by golly, you better throw yourself in the ring and say, I can try this. You pray you're not biting off more than you can chew, but it is, like I remind everybody, an ensemble. I mean, there's the poster girl. It's great, and it is her. She's the tentpole family holding it all up. She's has the largest emotional roots and tragedy attached to the property, emotional value, but it's, in a way, a metaphor and everybody's journey and story, and we get a slice of – it's a huge tapestry all around what the Cherry Orchard means to different people, and that's what I love about the play. The role itself, yeah, there are some – I mean, every act – I can only think one act at a time with this role. That's all I can do. And we all have to walk up and down these stairs, and I'm on a lower floor, so I can't complain. I got lucky. You know.
Is that something the actors think about when they take a role? I'm going to have to walk up and down the stairs.
I think about it a lot. Are you kidding? Is there a cross under or a crossover? Is there? Oh yeah, that's a big one.
Chuck, you said this is the first time you've done Chekhov, but do you understand why so many actors want to do Chekhov?
Yes, I do. You know, this is a kind of classic theater that. Where so much of what goes on in a character is an undertow or subtext, you know, and that's kind of a fun way to work, a fun genre to be in, a fun place, because you have to make up so much stuff, and so your let's pretend is much more serious in a different way, and it's flexing different muscles than say a Shakespeare or an August Wilson, where you're acting on the line, where the playwright is carrying narration and narrative forward in the text as we speak. So much of this play took place before we ever got there, and you know, so it's a fun challenge and a fun thing to work with.
And you also mentioned that it's an ensemble piece, and
very much so.
And pretty much every production has amazing casts. I'm thinking about
it's
the
required.
One that had Meryl Streep, Raoul Julia, Mary Beth Hurt in 1977. Although I don't know if Meryl's ever played the role you're playing here. I guess she's
Thank God,
probably
right?
about ready.
You're so funny. I'm not even going to touch that with a pole. But no, she was a formidable Dunyasha, of course, and.
Even the small roles require really top-notch acting.
I don't think there are any small roles in Chekhov. He's a smart writer. In fact, the less words, the larger the opportunity to fill it with implied meaning, because there is so much available in the writing itself, as in the arc of the story. The verbosity is not necessarily
look at Fierce.
Indicator. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I mean, he hardly says anything through the whole play. He's there. He's a present.
But you need someone like Joel Grey to do it.
Yes, who's a brilliant actor and all like that.
Yes, he's sticking your heart at the end of the show, yeah.
And so at the end of the show, it's like, oh, my God, did that really happen? To this person who hardly says anything that we feel so much about.
He has the last word and the last scene. Mm-hmm. The Cherry Orchard is on stage at the American Airlines Theater, 227 West 42nd Street, until December 4th. And then it can't
Including
go on any
December
longer
4th, I believe,
because
so.
Of the roundabout does limited runs.
Yes, yes. You know, they're that not-for-profit thing. They can keep going and doing new stuff. And cranking it out.
You all have things lined up, I assume.
Well, an actor for hire is,
hey,
you know,
I am totally available.
Oh, okay. So, if there, so you're saying if there are casting directors listening right now? We have three potentially out of work actors as of December 4th.
Hi, Diddly D, an actor's life for me.
Right?
The uncertainty of, yeah. Like, was the last job the last job?
Right?
You never know.
You never know.
No.
Well, thank you so much.
it ends like the play ends, right?
Yeah. I'm getting a bit depressed. We didn't even have a wedding at the end. Thank you all so
the gun
much.
Didn't go off either.